Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining me here, joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get your podcasts from. We appreciate all you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way. The trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. Be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo is in furry.
Ooh. A little furry.
Well, yeah.
That would be a little weird. Furry is kind of weird.
Nobody would expect that. So, wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. Go online, place an order. You can be having great coffee every single morning, starting your day off the right way. And, of course, you'll also be supporting the Bulldog Initiative. The same way, I moved my paper here, the same way you do when you work with PIP Printing and Signs. Reliable service for every business need. That's a great slogan. What it means is if you need to get people in the door at your business, PIP Printing and Signs has a solution for you. If you need new signage on the building to attract customers, if you want to drum up repeat business with mailers and banners and things of that nature, if you just need stuff for inside, you know, 3D signage, wall graphics, anything that can help market your business, they've got it at PIP Printing and Signs. If you're a business owner, you're already spending money on printing. Here's a chance to deal with a firm that's been doing business for over 30 years and helping out people across this state. Oh, and by the way, they're Bulldog owned and operated, and will give 10% of your sale right back to the Bulldog Initiative in your name. That is a deal you cannot pass up. Call Camden Baker at 601-499-5216 to find out more. If you need printing, call PIP today. College Corner and collegecornerstore.com have the maroon and white merchandise you're looking for, and you are looking for maroon and white merchandise. I know you're listening right now with your closet full of Banner M polos. And look, hey, I get it. When that was all that was available to you, you wanted to support the Bulldogs, that's what you had to buy. But, buddy, we've got a lot of great options now. We've got the state script. We've got the interlocking. We've got the M over S. We've got the walking bully. They're all available to you at College Corner. Two locations in the Jackson area, Ridgeland by Fleet Feet, Flowood by the Half Shell, or you can shop online at collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler is Starkville's flagship restaurant. Restaurant Tyler had a celebrity there yesterday. I don't know if they were aware of that or not. The Godfather was in town yesterday and ate at Restaurant
Tyler
and said he was very impressed with the blue plate there. So,
what was he doing here? Conducting business?
Family business. Let's just leave it at that. A little family business. Just we don't talk about that outside the fam. So don't
waste management.
That's enough. That's enough. You know, he had a meeting. We'll just leave it at that. So, but he was like, man, this place is great. I guess he hadn't been for lunch. And he was like, man, it's fantastic. I was like, yeah, I keep telling people. And nobody wants to, if people don't want to believe me, that's their choice. But I'm telling you the truth. The food's good.
It's not good. Just whistling Dixie over here.
I would never whistle Dixie under any circumstances.
That's true.
There are no circumstances for me that I would be excited to whistle or would even be willing to whistle Dixie.
Okay, but it's just a phrase.
How
will you just accept the phrase?
You offended me.
Will you just accept the phrase, please?
I'm not just whistling. I'm not just whistling
Freebird
Dixie by Randy Houser. How about that?
There you go.
Is that better? I don't know. Well, if my own family now believes me, hopefully you will too. So, Restaurant Tyler, best blue plate in the state is at Restaurant Tyler. 16 Priority One Bank locations throughout Central Mississippi here to serve you. Go to PriorityOneBank.com to find out more, find a location near you, to find out what the financial services they offer are. And you're going to be very impressed when you try to compare them to one of the big corporate banks. You're going to see that stride for stride, they're right there with them. But you don't have to worry about the big corporate bank way of doing things, the service that they offer versus the service you're going to get at a Priority One bank, a local community bank. It's just not on the same. It's just not on the same page. Priority One Bank knows how to take care of their customers. They know how to take care of you and your family, but they still offer all the incredible financial benefits that a big corporate bank would give you. So it's the best of both worlds. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. Got a lot to talk about today. We got some baseball. We got some football stuff I want to talk to you about. We got some SEC pre. This is a full day, Robbie. I'm excited.
About time we get to work.
I know, right? So we had a great interview. We'll play a little later in the show. We'll do one of our SEC spring previews today. We'll do Florida. I talked with a guy from On Three. So I wanted to get the real expertise, you know.
So yes. Who'd you talk to? Who's
Nick DeLaCorre from Gators
Online? Oh yeah. Yeah.
That guy knows what he's talking about. So but I want to start. Let's start with baseball. Bulldogs get an extra inning win. 9-5 is the final score over Samford, a game that had to go into extras. The state had a lead, then fell behind, then came back, tied it up, and then in the 10th inning, we're able to just sort of open the game up. You know, Bryce Chance, the hero, off the bench with a pinch-hit home run, and then state tacked on a couple more runs from a Mershon and Dakota Jordan singles. Nobody cares at the end of the year how you won. All they care about are the wins. It's a top 100 road win, so that's a good thing for your RPI. And outside of Colby Holcomb, who at this point, Robbie, I'm just kind of writing off. You pitched pretty well on Tuesday night. They pitched pretty well.
Pico wasn't exceptional, but he's knocking the rust off.
Yeah, he's got a lot of rust to knock off. So I mean, I'm willing to let that go, but you know. After Holcomb left the game, State's bullpen was very, very good. Tyler Davis, I think, struck out five of the six batters that he retired in the ninth and tenth inning. It's one of those things where people who want to look for things that are negative, and I'll be honest with you, I'm usually one of those people.
What? Well, you?
I know. No. I know.
That doesn't sound right.
But they would look at it and go, wow, you had to play extra innings to beat Samford. I mean, it is baseball, and teams like Samford knocked Auburn out of their or knocked off Auburn last year in their regional. Or they were in the regional championship, and Southern Miss had to beat them twice to knock them out. Samford's a quality baseball program. I look at this as a pretty good win for Mississippi State.
I never really care about the style points in midweek games.
Mm-hmm.
These things are such crapshoots, and like they're always so wacky. Mm-hmm. You just have to win these games and figure it out. Now, State had to throw three of their best bullpen arms to win this game,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay. I mean, just win. You just have to win. You just have to get wins at this point if you're Mississippi State, and that's what they did. And you're exactly right. I mean, outside of Holcomb, this was a well-pitched ball game. It didn't seem that way when you look at it on the surface when you give up five runs to Samford, but four of those were from Colby Holcomb. And then you had Cam Schulke, Brooks Auger, and Tyler Davis combined for four hits, no runs, three walks, and eight strikeouts. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Eight strikeouts, three walks, and six and two-thirds innings.
Yeah.
That'll do. Now, you would much rather have had, you know, a better showing in between there, but it is what it is. I think – Pico Akon definitely showed some things, but also, you know, pitch count had gotten pretty high. I think he had 33 pitches after the first inning. He pitched a much more clean second inning,
mm-hmm.
so that was fine. And he's still getting back into it. I mean, this is a guy that just came off of elbow surgery last year. This is his second outing, and his first two have not been great, but he's got the stuff to help you. I think we've seen enough from Colby Holcomb. I just don't know if it's going to happen for him. He's one of the few guys that, with Justin Parker, just hasn't seemed to translate to better results from the previous year.
Right.
And, you know, I imagine the coaches are going to continue to try to find it with him. I don't know if we're going to see it at this point. It's hard to imagine.
He's the Sarantola this year. They're just give him an inning in midweek games and just see if he can try to figure something out. But
And that's what they keep trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you keep putting him in these ball games where you think, okay, he could go out here and have a really good showing and build some confidence. And he just, for whatever reason, it's not like he's walking a lot of guys. He just can't get it past them or get that put out pitch. They're just, batters just see him well. I mean, he has a 9.82 earned run average in 14 and two thirds innings. He's given up a hit an inning. He's given up over a run an inning. So I just don't know what else we have to see there. But other than that, I thought it was a good ball game. State left some runs out there for sure. Yeah. They had some opportunities to score more runs.
And they loaded with one out with Hunter Hines at the plate and couldn't get anything out of that.
That's got to be better. But Dakota Jordan was fantastic again. And Bryce Chance gave you a really big hit. So I think we saw some good things in this game. And you just had to find a way to win, and they did.
This sort of goes back to something we said on Monday about this team, and that nothing's going to come easy for this team for the most part. They are going to have to grind out wins. They're better than they were a year ago, but this is not Mississippi State 2019, 2021, 2016. They're a good enough team to play in the postseason. I will say that at this point. If they don't make the postseason, it will be a huge disappointment. If they continue to play the way they're playing, they're going to make the postseason. But nothing's going to come easy for this team, and that includes this weekend down in Gainesville when they'll take on the Florida Gators, who – if I'm Mississippi State, I'm like, is there any way we could play today and tomorrow? Florida is the worst midweek team in the country, but they're really good on the weekends. But they lost last night. They got crushed by Florida State in the midweek. I think they have 10 losses already, and I think
– and that's a program that they've – haven't they pretty much dominated Florida State? Or am I thinking of somebody else in that state?
No, you're right. They had a long winning streak against them that's been snapped, yeah.
Kyle Niblett, by the way, texted me yesterday. He said he is available for a preview if you would like to talk to him. So there you go.
It's so tempting to bring back Niblett's tidbits.
You know what we should do is get him on and do a WrestleMania preview. And just give him the last – just give him the last – like we warn everyone in advance, like maybe three times in the same show we warn people. We are warning, we're about to talk wrestling. Yeah. And for the last 15 minutes, we just give you
15.
And I and Kyle Niblett, or however much.
The last 50 minutes, you mean.
That'll work. I think that would be a great
segment. We might do that. I just want to say
that. And all of our worlds will be colliding.
I don't know if Kyle's listening or not, but when we went to AEW, we asked a couple of the backstage people there, like, do you know Kyle Niblett? They were like, yeah. This guy.
Like high-ranking AEW personnel.
Oh, yeah, we know Kyle. Yeah. So.
Oh, man.
The baseball thing is tempting, though, because he would know it better than anybody.
Dude, Kyle is a wealth of knowledge on many things.
I'm going to consider this. I'm going to take it under consideration. I'm leaning yes on it. But when we talked to Lamonis on Monday on Sports Talk Mississippi, he gave us the typical injured player answer on Nate Dome that was, he's close, you never know. Do you have any idea, or do you have any leaning one way or the other if Nate Dome could be back? If not in the starting rotation, at least maybe getting some innings this weekend?
No clue. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think that's a fine that's a fine position to take if you're Lamonis.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking about preparing for a weekend and trying to have the edge on someone, if you do have arguably your best pitcher back this week, I don't think you want to tell people that you have him back when you're playing a top 10 team. Try to get as much of an edge as you possibly can, which, I mean, I'm sure Florida's preparing for him as well, but it'd be a lot easier to throw him out there after 2 weeks of Evan Sieri being out there than not. I have no idea. I feel like he's close. Just me guessing. You know me, I will gladly tell you that I have no clue on certain things. But just guessing, I feel like he's probably close to getting back out there. It would be great to have him. But State's been competitive in each of their last two Friday night or first games of the SEC weekend. So
yeah, Sierra pitched well enough to win on Friday night or Thursday night, I guess I should say, of last week. So Florida is 14-10 on the year, ranked number 6 in the country with 10 losses. 5 of their 10 losses are midweek games.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah,
I don't understand it. And they're top 10
and 2 in the conference, but I mean the midweek is just that's just insane. It's something I don't understand at all, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, LSU has done this in the past where they just sucked in the midweek.
Yeah,
and it's like you're just refusing to throw some of your best guys in the midweek, or just a mindset thing. I mean, some teams just.
Mindset makes more sense. This is Florida. They should have enough talent to be able to beat Stetson and Central Florida.
No, I agree. Yeah. But there is a big difference in your top-end bullpen arms, like with Mississippi State, a Colby Holcomb and a Brooks Auger. And we saw that in one game last night. And Mississippi State was willing to throw probably their three best relievers in there back-to-back-to-back in that ball game. I don't know if Florida does that. You know, LSU sometimes.
State 18-8 on the season. So if we play the assumption game that they'll lose the series but get one, they're sitting at 19-10. And then your next few series, you have a chance if you play your best. I wouldn't say pile up the wins, but to get wins, right? You can beat Georgia at home. You can win that series in Oxford. You can win it.
They've done it with worse teams.
Yeah, you can. I mean, they did it 2 years ago against a team that ended up winning the national championship. You can beat Auburn at home, and then you play Vanderbilt, and we'll reset at that point, I guess. But your next three series, you have a legitimate chance to go 6-3. And then you would be sitting at, I'm going to do the math, you'd be sitting
9-6.
No, because I'm counting the loss to get to count this series, too. Coming up.
Oh, so gotcha.
You would be 10-8. I mean, you're on pace to host if you had won a couple of more non-conference games at that point.
Yeah. And I'm in, you know, me personally, I'm in countdown mode as far as wins are concerned. Every win is big for Mississippi State now.
Agreed.
The magic number for me is 14 SEC wins. I think that firmly gets you in the NCAA tournament. And then from there, if you get to 14, then you're trying to position yourself for whatever else, whether that's moving up the 2-seed line, whether that's somehow hosting. You have to rack up some wins to host. But I think 14 gets you in. That's kind of the magic number in SEC with SEC teams. Very rarely does a 14-win SEC team not make the tournament. So that's kind of where I am right now. That's 11 more conference wins. And you scratch them across here early in these, you know, tougher games was the question. And so far they've won 3 in the first 2 series, which is ahead of schedule. Now, can you win one more here, which to me is 1 or 2 more wins than I thought Mississippi State was capable of getting in these first 3 series? And then you're starting to play with house money a little bit. Because I thought this team could very well go 1-8 in the first 3 conference series. Now they've kind of given themselves some leeway with that LSU win and then taking one from A&M. You have to avoid getting swept this weekend. Yeah. 4-5 in SEC play is a great place to be after playing 3 top 10 teams.
I've said it once. I'll say it again. State could have been coming off of a year where they hosted a super region, right? Let's say State last year, they're totally normal Mississippi State season. They lose in the Super Regional. They don't go to Omaha. If they were 4-5 at this point in conference play, I'd be like totally normal.
Yeah, you
know, I wouldn't be concerned about it at all. Yeah.
Well, and we've seen
the conference record's not my concern at all. It's the 5 non-conference losses that are hurting State right this second. State should be sitting here right this second instead of being 18-8. They should be something like 21-5. And if they were that, they'd be in the top 10 probably.
And I will say, like, I feel like them winning that series against LSU has given them a little bit of grace there on that. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that's going to hinder them a little bit. But
I've always been somebody that says, like, if you're winning in SEC play, that's going to cancel all this other stuff out. You might be moving down a line in some form or fashion, but it's not going to hurt you as badly, because winning in the SEC is ultimately going to be the trump card over a midweek non-conference game, you know. And they didn't lose any weekend series during that stretch as well. Losing two to Austin Peay is to me the most damaging thing right now. But other than that, I mean, it was an okay non-conference. I mean, you blew some games, but it happens in non-conference play. You know, you're going to have some games that you're just thinking, how in the heck did they lose to this team? But that's how basketball works, or baseball. That's how baseball works.
Yeah. It's going to be a very interesting series. We'll preview it more in depth tomorrow. I think I'm going to
– with Cal Niblett.
I think Niblett's going to be a part of the show. I feel like it's happening.
Why not?
Of Niblett's tidbits. Let's do it. If he comes on, I want tidbits, though. I'm not going to ask questions. I'm going to be like, go. Just go. Let's let him rock, and we'll do it. All right, let's move into the rest of the show. That's brought to you by our friends over at the Mississippi Beef Council, who want to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. And yeah, it is. It is what's for dinner. If you're looking for great weeknight meals, beef is a great alternative. It cooks quickly, plenty of protein for the family to help those growing kids, and it's delicious. So, you know, if you're thinking about what you're going to cook for your family on the weeknight, if you don't want to be all night in the kitchen, beef is a great, great choice. And, of course, on the weekends when you're firing up the grill, nothing beats the sizzle of beef. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District is the place to find the smoked Southern soul food that you're looking for. Going to Two Brothers today as you're listening. So, looking forward to that trip. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to eating good food. And that's what I do every single time I go to Two Brothers. And it doesn't matter what I order, everything on the menu hits for me. So if you're going to be in Starkville this weekend or any weekend and you don't have a trip to Two Brothers on the plan, I don't know what to tell you, man. You need to reevaluate. You need to think about what you're doing. Somebody made a mistake there. Make sure you're headed to Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District. Great products and great service is what every business likes to promise you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems and have for 49 years. If you need technology for your business, give them a call. And then if you need service, you call that same number. No 1-800 number, no call center to put you on hold for 45 minutes. No out-of-state technician to make an appointment with and you hope that he can be there in a week or so. This is a Mississippi business, so a lot of times they're going to be able to take care of your problems the exact same day. The number is 601-362-9192, or you can visit them online at absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems helps your business do business. If you're going to be in Starkville anytime soon, you need to make sure a trip to Maroon & Co. is on your to-do list. Guys, I've been saying it, you know, we've been talking about the state script. We've been talking about, I didn't even realize this, by the way, that Mississippi State changed its shade of maroon as well. So that's something, you know, to keep an eye on, because you need new stuff. And if you need new stuff, you need to check out the stuff they have at Maroon & Co. Stuff you cannot get anywhere else. Stuff with the correct logos, the state script, the interlocking, the M over S. And of course, if you're a Bulldog Initiative supporter and you want to let people know that, if you want to wear the same polos and hoodies and everything the coaches are wearing, they've got them at Maroon & Co. A new collection of Horn Legend polos and quarter zips, as well as the Wild Gear cups that everybody is wanting right now. A great collection there over at Maroon & Co. Before you head to Duty Noble this summer, make sure you're heading to Maroon & Co. I guess it's just a Florida theme here at this part of the show, because we're going to talk about one of our SEC previews. If you missed it from yesterday, we didn't have it on the show, but it's on this podcast feed. My conversation with Jordan Hill from Dogs 24/7 about the Georgia Bulldogs. Not the most interesting team in the world. Florida is an interesting team, and they play a game against Mississippi State that, quite honestly, Robbie, I think will be the swing game of the season for both teams, especially for State. Well, we'll talk more about that after this interview. Let's go to that now. Nick De La Torre, he covers the Gators for Gators Online. That's the On3 Florida website. Really, lot of information coming your way in the next few minutes. Here's that interview now. We're headed to Florida for today's installment of our spring previews. Nick De La Torre joins me. He's from Gators Online, which is the On3 website covering Florida. Got a really good crew down there covering the Gators. And, I mean, we know the situation down there in Florida, right? Year three of Billy Napier. The first 2 years have not gone according to what Florida fans would expect from their program. What's the mood, though, of the program and those within the building going into this year three?
Yeah, spring's the time for when hope springs eternal, right? Yeah. All the stories out of spring are happy and positive. That's the case in Gainesville. There's a lot of newness. Three new coaches on the defensive side of the ball, including Ron Roberts, who was Billy Napier's defensive coordinator at Louisiana. So there's a lot of hope. I think you get that hope because of the new coaches. You get that hope because you have a 23-year-old quarterback coming back in Graham Mertz, who, you know, I questioned the take even when Florida took him last year. You know, what are you doing going to the Big Ten, namely Wisconsin? Yeah. This is an offense and an expectation of offense that Steve Spurrier built, that Urban Meyer tweaked, but, you know, raised to new levels, and Wisconsin can't spell pass and has no interest in it. And Graham Mertz certainly exceeded all those expectations. And there's such a history of quarterbacks in the second year of the system coming out of the transfer portal. If you look at, you know, Joe Burrow, Jaden Daniels, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, that second year in the system, there's usually a big jump. And then you've got some guy named DJ Lagway, who I think won every single award. They might have created new awards because of how good he was in high school to give him. So there's a lot of hope in this season and then certainly in the future because of DJ Lagway and Graham Mertz, both at the quarterback position.
There's just no getting around the schedule for Florida. It is literally the hardest schedule I've ever seen a college football team have. It's going to be even a really good team would struggle against this schedule. There'll certainly be tough games. So what's a reasonable expectation for this team this season with this schedule? And is, you know, whatever you say, is that going to be enough to satisfy Florida fans?
Yeah, I thought, you know, before the transfer portal opened, I thought, hey, this schedule might just be brand names. And, you know, it might be brand name cereal, but the cereal might be stale. You know, Florida-Miami is a great rivalry game. They don't play every year anymore, so that's a hugely important game. But they lost their quarterback. And you look at Tennessee, was losing Joe Milton. And you look at Kentucky, and they lost their quarterback. And LSU is losing Jaden Daniels. And Florida State lost Jordan Travis. And then the transfer portal happens, and all of those teams picked up a quarterback, whether it's, you know, DJ, Cam Ward. I think that every single team picked up their quarterback. So for Florida, when I look at this schedule, I've been saying you need to catch wins early or you'll catch hands late. I said that last year, and Florida's over under last year was 5.5, and they went into the Georgia game with 5 wins and lost out. They were 5-2 and finished 5-7. So it turned out that way last year. I think I look at this schedule and I think 7-5 would be really, really good. And obviously there's winning and losing and just, you know, what the number is. And then how do you look? Because if you lose to Georgia by 35, that feels a lot different than, you know, even losing to Georgia by 14, but it was a game late in the fourth quarter. The beginning of the season to me, it's just massively important for Billy Napier. When you look at that Florida-Miami game, my dad went to the University of Florida, graduated in the 70s, and I think 79, actually, when they went 0-10-1. But Florida and Miami played every year. I'm from South Florida. I remember Florida and Miami playing every year, and this rivalry is so heated. You have two coaches who were hired the same offseason who are both under 500. And I think it's almost an easier game for Mario Cristobal because he's on the road. Both of these coaches are trying to sell hope. Good luck selling hope to your fan base who desperately wants to beat their rival in this game. And I think you can sell it a little bit more by losing on the road. Good luck, losing to Miami week one and then trying to sell that game. And you get your one non-Power 5 opponent after that, Samford, and then it's Texas A&M, Mississippi State. So I think Florida fans think, okay, you've got some new coaches coming in, then UCF, but then you're at Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State. So like I said, you need to catch wins early because you might catch hands late.
Yeah, and, of course, Mississippi State on that schedule. That's the week four game. The first three for Florida, as you mentioned, Miami and then Samford, their one FCS opponent. Then they host Texas A&M. So that game against Mississippi State, first trip for the Gators here since Dan Mullen's return in 2018, that feels like a massive swing game for both teams. Like, the loser of that game is going to be really struggling for bowl eligibility. The winner is going to probably have a chance to have postseason play. How crucial is that game on the schedule for Florida?
That's crucial. I mean, if I look and I've played this game with Florida fans, you know, here's a realistic what I think will happen, and everything can change with injuries. And here's my like best case scenario. My best case scenario, I have Florida beating, you know, Miami, Samford, A&M, Mississippi State, UCF, starting 5-0. And then there's still a very real road to 5-7, even after that. And I think what Florida fans are holding on to early on in this schedule is, if you beat Miami, that's a home game. You get Texas A&M, it's a new coaching staff at home. You beat UCF, it's at home. The one thing that should concern Florida fans is Florida's been a completely different football team on the road. Not that they've been great anywhere, but they've been worse on the road, and they haven't been able to figure out how to play competitive and at times even competent football on the road. It was my first trip to Starkville, that Dan Mullen year, before that milk went sour, which I'm sure fans of at Mississippi State
know. One of the grossest football games ever played, too. Just an awful game.
Not a great game. Yeah, that was Todd Grantham's like engage eight at the very end, sack, and you squeak out a win. But yeah, Dan has a way of rubbing fan bases the wrong way. So I'm sure the Mississippi State fans know what I'm talking about there. Yes. But that game was ugly. But that place is loud. Florida has sent routinely 10 guys on the field. One time they sent 11 guys on the field, but only 10 different numbers, jersey-wise, which you also can't do.
Yes.
And those cowbells are loud. Like Mississippi State, I gave it a lot of credit. I think I joked in the past that it was a small stadium. I had never been there. And then the first time I went, I was like, okay, yeah, there's a reason why they made rules about when you can and cannot clang your bell. So I gained a lot of respect for Mississippi State when I went there. And that'll be a really tough environment. That'll be Florida's first road game. I think it helps that you have a veteran quarterback. But what does the offensive line look like? I don't know that Florida's offensive line, they tell us and they feel like they got a lot better. I don't know that they have. And I think they'll be, you know, back in the shopping aisle when the portal opens again, which might prove my point that I don't think they did enough in recruiting and then the first portal window on the offensive line. So that's going to be a huge test.
You talked a little bit about Graham Mertz so far, and I'm with you on the surprise factor of how good he was a season ago. And nobody completely flew under the radar. Nobody really realized the kind of season he was having down there in Gainesville. How much better can he be for this Florida team in his second year down there?
Yeah, I think in talking to Graham, I think this time last year he was still learning his receivers' names. While learning a playbook and trying to do all these things. And I think there's something to be said for that. I think Graham last year, I'll say that he did everything he was asked to do. In the beginning of the year, I kept telling fans who would throw his completion percentage at me. He led the SEC in completion percentage. And then I said, okay, well, 70% of those completions are coming 8 yards and in. He's not throwing the ball down the field. Florida's not pushing the ball down the field. They're not asking him to make difficult throws. Last year, when right around the Georgia game time, or actually it happened at South Carolina, Florida's losing on the road at South Carolina in October, the week before the bye week, and they asked Graham to win the game with his arm, and he did. Obviously, the Georgia game was going to be the Georgia game, but then you had to play Arkansas, LSU, Missouri, Florida State. All four of those games, they had to ask Graham to throw the ball, and he's pushing the ball downfield. So I think no matter what it was that they asked Graham Mertz to do, he was able to do it and do it at a high level last year. So I think just the comfortability he has, the familiarity he has with the offense now, it should help him in this season. And talking to Billy Napier, he says, you know, we almost have two different quarterback rooms because we have Graham, who's essentially in college calculus. And then we have a freshman who, while super talented, is learning not only the playbook, the plays, the audibles, the names, the nomenclature. He's learning just how to be a college student on top of that. So it's almost like you're teaching, you have two different classes in the quarterback room. And I think they will use DJ Lagway to some extent. But I think really it's just how old Graham is. And we're sort of getting away from this, but Graham will be 24 by the end of the season. You know, we've got these COVID seniors who are still around and still older. And I was watching baseball over the weekend. I'm like, this is an 18-year-old pitcher facing a 25-year-old six-year senior. I'm like, this guy should be playing in the minors. And you know, of course, the 18-year-old gives up a home run. So we're getting those older guys out out of the system here in a couple of years. But I think having an older quarterback who's experienced, has played, started over 40 games should bode well for Florida.
There was a quote earlier this week from Ole Miss defensive end Princely. Oh, I'm going to do the best I can here.
Uman Mielen. I'll help you out there.
Thank you very much.
It took us years, so yeah, I got you.
Well, and thankfully I don't cover Ole Miss, so this will probably be the only time I really have to talk much about him. But basically, I don't know if calling out is the right term, but talked about how much more structure and how he feels like he's getting better coaching at Ole Miss than he did at Florida, and that the Florida defensive scheme was basically like use your talent and go from there, and not as much structure as that's the way I would put it. What were your thoughts on that quote and that Florida defense? You know, Austin Armstrong is a guy we in Mississippi are familiar with from his time at Southern Mississippi. Mm-hmm. What is that defense going to look like in 2024?
Yeah, I think Prince is a guy who's always going to speak his mind. He had two separate coaches. So the coach he was speaking about there was Mike Peterson, who's Florida's outside linebackers coach here. I would say that Princely was last year was the first time he was really asked to drop in coverage a bunch. Thought he did well. But yeah, Princely's a guy who's going to speak his mind. I don't know that Florida, the coaching staff, the fans were definitely on Princely, and he had a love-hate relationship with the Florida fans, a guy that would get on Twitter, and we would tell him, like, hey, just don't get on Twitter today. But yeah, it was definitely it did come across as a shot. I think fans took it as a shot, but there's also a probably minority, but a vocal minority of Florida fans that are like – done with the staff, and they're like, go Princely. So it remains to be seen. He's a very talented player. He led Florida in tackles for loss and sacks in each of the last two seasons. So Florida's trying to figure out how to replace him. I'm interested to see. I think Austin Armstrong's a great coach. The defense last year was terrible. And then you bring in Ron Roberts. Austin Armstrong is 20-something years younger than Ron Roberts, was Ron Roberts' graduate assistant at Louisiana. Right now, in the spring, when everything is positive, they're working together great. And Ron's able to step right in and knows the play calls. Ron knows what the scheme is. Ron knows what the objective is because it's a Ron Roberts defense, and it's what Austin Armstrong learned under Ron Roberts. My question that I posed all offseason is when you get into the season and you have a game where you give up 500 yards or you have a game where you lose at Mississippi State and they're able to score and put up yards, or if you lose at Tennessee and Nico has a game where he throws for 400 and runs for 200, do the egos start getting in the way? Does the mentor, who is now just a position coach under his mentee, does he start saying, hey, I should be the one calling plays? So that's what I see is right now you're 0-0, you haven't lost a game, you're not really facing adversity other than maybe, you know, injuries inside of spring camp. What happens when, you know, the bullets start flying and you start facing some real adversity? But I think Florida has, depth-wise and through the transfer portal, made their cornerback room, their secondary, much more athletic. I think they have added linebackers, one in Miles Graham and then Pup Howard, a transfer from South Carolina. I think the linebacker room is better. They added the number one or number two defensive lineman. I think the number one also went to Ole Miss,
yes,
and Walter Nolan. But getting Joey Slackman, who was the Ivy League Defensive Player of the Year, I think the defensive line's gotten better. So the pieces have gotten better. So now we'll see if the scheme will be better with better pieces.
You mentioned the great history of Florida on offense and going back to Spurrier and all the incredible running backs and receivers that have come through Gainesville. Who are those guys this year? You know, obviously Trevor Etienne made the trip up to Athens. I'm sure that went over really well down there in Gainesville. Who are those guys that are going to run the ball, to catch the ball, and make the big plays for the Gators this year?
Yeah, you get Montrell Johnson back at running back. He's run for at least 800 yards, I think, in all three of his seasons. The first was at with Billy Napier at Louisiana, and then 2 years here at Florida. He's a senior. Treon Webb, who's just from up the road in Jacksonville. And then you added somebody who you guys are probably familiar with in Kanan Daniels, who I think is such a talent, can really run the ball. I think ran the ball for over 2,000 yards in his junior and his senior seasons in Mississippi. And they kind of asked him to do everything. Hey, can you carry the footballs to practice, run the ball, throw the ball? Can you tackle somebody? Can you play catcher for the baseball team? He kind of did everything in high school. He's super talented. Jaden Ball is another running back they added. I think the running back room, losing Trevor Etienne, I think will be worse for the perception. And it was terrible for perception, especially when he goes to Georgia, a school you haven't beat in half a decade. And I think the production-wise, I think the running back room will be fine. The biggest thing for me is you have Eugene Wilson, and I keep using this analogy for Florida fans. Eugene Wilson is an incredible talent, had a great freshman season. But in 2020, when Kyle Pitts and Kadarius Toney were wreaking havoc during that COVID season, when Kyle Pitts got a concussion, it became a lot easier to defend Kadarius Toney. And nothing changed with Kadarius Toney. It's just you don't have to pick your poison. There's only one you have to worry about now. Last year, you had Ricky Pearsall and Eugene Wilson, and you kind of had to pick your poison. Who do we want to double or shift our attention and our focus to? And then that opens up for somebody else. I don't know that Florida has identified that person to take the heat and take the eyes and the pressure off of Eugene Wilson just yet. And I think they'll look for a transfer portal wide receiver if they can. And to me, the tight end room is just okay. I like Arliss Boardingham. I think he needs to learn to block and be a more well-rounded tight end, but he's 6'3", 6'4", 240, and he can run and catch, and he might have a 7-foot, you know, wingspan. He's a really athletic tight end. So offensively, Florida has some pieces, but it in the SEC, it's always going to come down to the line of scrimmage. I think Florida is still looking for a starter. I think they have three positions. Center and both tackles are probably solidified in terms of starters, and then you'll probably start a sophomore at left guard, and you're trying to figure out right guard. So you could have great receivers. If the quarterback only has 3.5 seconds to throw it, 2 seconds to throw it, the receivers need to, you know, can only do so much. So I think there's still time, obviously, before the season starts, but there's definitely, I still see holes in the depth chart and on the roster that Florida needs to address.
A lot of great information today, Nick. Really appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again when the season runs around. We're doing some opponent previews here on the podcast. Nick De La Torre, GatorsOnline.com, 413 Sports. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, thanks to Nick. Appreciate his time. Week 4, Mississippi State hosting Florida. State's first three games, Eastern Kentucky at Arizona State, Toledo. Now, Toledo was a really good Group of Five team this last year. It'll be very tough to win on the road against a Power Five opponent in Arizona State. But I honestly think State has a better than 50-50 chance of being 3-0 when they play that game against Florida. Okay? Florida's first three games. Miami, they do play Samford, and then they host Texas A&M. I think there's a better than
Samford 50. Score like 50 points on them one year.
Yes, they beat them, but they the final score was like 56. Well, of course, Samford did that to Mullen at State too. Don't forget,
he did 2016.
Samford was his kryptonite.
Well, it could have likely been, you know, Peter Sermon and who he had at the time that after he fired Todd Grantham. Right? He threw Todd Grantham under the bus, and
I think he was still there at that point. Though that may have been the game after where he's like, I gotta move on. Long story short, though, those three games, I think there's a better than 50-50 chance that Florida's 1-2. They could very easily lose to Miami and to Texas A&M. And if that's the case, when they come to Starkville at 1-2, you talk about under the gun. And they have a bye week the next week, Robbie. You know what that means. When do they love firing coaches? During the bye week.
This is back-to-back years where you look at the schedule for Florida and you're like, how are they going to do this? And they followed the last year. They followed exactly how we laid it out. Basically, like they're not going to have a winning record. When you look at the schedule, it's just impossible. And now they're kind of stuck with Napier. And then you have the Prince kid that went to Ole Miss is now calling him out and saying he didn't feel like he was getting coached.
I asked Nick about that in that interview.
What'd he say?
He said that there's some truth into what he was saying. And he talked about how poor they were defensively, and that's why they brought in a guy like Ron Roberts to hopefully get that squared away.
Yeah, usually that works out, doesn't it?
No.
Yeah, this is brutal, which, Miami, I don't know what they're going to be with Mario Cristobal, and they're kind of in flux as well, but you look at the schedule, and again, I'm just sitting here thinking, how are they going to do it? How are they going to sell this fan base that things are moving in the right direction, that Billy Napier is the guy? From the very beginning, this has felt like a bad fit for Florida, and I think it's going to end really badly, and that's going to be back-to-back awful hires, basically. Well, Dan Mullen went to the SEC championship, so I can't really say that that was an awful hire, but it was a failed hire in the end.
It didn't work out. Yeah.
This has been a far worse hire. And I say it all the time. We can't say that, the talent level wasn't very good or whatever. This is still a top 15 roster every single year. They're not up to snuff for Florida standards as far as recruiting is concerned. And it's actually improved under Napier. And somehow they seem like they're getting worse, and the culture doesn't seem great. This is a brutal schedule. Even their games at home are going to be really difficult. And at the end, that Florida State game used to be a game where, as far as a non-conference game is concerned, Florida was owning that series. And now that looks like an auto loss every year. So I don't see a whole lot of wins on the schedule. I don't see a winning record yet again. Back-to-back seasons.
Yeah, and if that's the case, I think you might see a big change at Florida, because I've said it before, I don't think you get to hire three football coaches. So I think our old friend Scott Strickland would be in some trouble there as well. And then maybe a new athletic director. But the problem with that is this. It's difficult to hire. You can't do it at the end of the season, right? You can't get a new athletic director in and a new football coach in the time you have to get your signing class together and everything else. So if
Napier, State like, certainly couldn't do it.
Right. If Florida's like 1-3, then they play Central Florida, right? And they can beat them. Although it's not a gimme. It's certainly not a gimme with KJ Jefferson down there. So let's say they're 2-3, right? I think they play Georgia the next game. Georgia just rolls them, right? Beats them like 56-7. Something just speculating, right? That's where Strickland gets fired. They fire Strickland. Then you have a month to get an athletic director in, and then he comes in and he makes the change at the end of the season.
This SEC schedule is absolutely brutal.
It is the hardest schedule I've ever seen in a college football year ever.
If they played Kentucky at Kentucky, there's no question. that it would be the hard. They got
Lucky won the last time they were in Gainesville, though.
It, basically, every team that's going to be competing for a playoff outside of Missouri in the conference is on the schedule. Maybe Oklahoma, but Texas, LSU, Ole Miss on the highest of highs for them. Georgia, Tennessee is going to be really good. Kentucky should be solid. That's at home, but you know, A&M I think could be better. State is on the road. This is a brutal schedule. Samford is their easiest game, and that's a team that runs a pretty good offense. This is tough. This is going to be really tough. I mean, I'm seeing like four wins here.
It's going to be they if they have a winning season, that then Napier's done a hell of a job. I'll just say that. So, all right. Speaking of Kentucky, we'll talk to John Hale of the Lexington Herald Leader about the Wildcats this week as well. So that'll be on tomorrow's podcast. We will preview Mississippi State, Florida, and
with Kyle Niblett.
Jeff, do what?
With Kyle Niblett.
With Kyle Niblett. And
hey, real quick, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but the whole talk about Scott Strickland reminded me.
Yeah.
How crazy it was. One day I'm walking through Bridgestone Arena and I saw Greg Byrne and then turned around John Cohen and then turned around Larry Templeton, Scott Strickland, and then Zach Selman, like all in separate places.
Yeah.
Mississippi State's last five athletic, is that right? Five, four, five?
Unless you want to count Bracky.
Athletic directors were all in the same building.
Bracky was there too. You just didn't see him.
He's probably so.
Yeah.
I don't count Bracky. I have a lot of respect for him. I just didn't count him as the sitting athletic director.
Right.
But how insane is that?
Yeah.
The last Mississippi State is SEC basically tournament. The cradle of SEC athletic directors.
The last time I was at the SEC tournament, I was at Rippey's with Rippey.
And oh, yeah.
I'm sitting there having a beer, and I look up, and Scott Strickland is just staring at me. And I was like, hold on, I'll be right back. I went outside to talk to him for a little bit. And then I saw him this year at a football game. I don't know if I told you that or not.
At a state game?
Yeah, it was the Kentucky game. So Florida was off that week. And as I was coming around to go to the press conference, he was just standing out there, like, waiting on somebody. So I talked to him for a few minutes. So, yeah, he's still around. He may have some more time to be around if the things don't turn around quickly for Billy Napier. So we have
as much as people like down Mississippi and even Mississippi State and stuff, you can't get rid of these people like being around Mississippi State or following Mississippi State or having some kind of connection. It's crazy to me. I don't know.
I mean, I agree with you. All right, so baseball preview, Kentucky. Spring preview, and we're supposed to talk to Jeff Lebby on Thursday as well. So anything he says of interest, we will get that to you as
well. Two interviews with Jeff Lebby in 1 month.
No, we're supposed to talk to Jeff Lebby.
Oh, the media thing.
Yeah. Not just me.
I'll be at Willie Yeh's thing.
All right, so you go cover that, and I'll go cover Lebby, and we should have a full show on tomorrow. So
double whammy.
Yeah. Whammy! All right, we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.